Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hello and welcome. Dave Schrader in all afternoon with you. 3 hours of joy and fun and strange news stories. Well, hopefully that's what's going to take place. Happy New Year to everybody. Josh, Happy New Year. Good to see you, my friend.
Happy New Year.
Have you got any big New Year's traditions? I mean, I don't do the resolution nonsense, but is there anything you do to kick off every New Year?
Yeah, I go to bed.
Oh,
yes.
Excellent.
It's a thing I like to try every single year right around the ball drop. It's one of my favorite hobbies.
Are you one of those that watches the ball drop in New York so that you can go to bed an hour earlier here?
So I did tough it out yesterday. I did tough it out, and then I realized we are flyover country. DJ talked about this last year, mm-hmm. or last hour. There's not really a Midwest showcase of New Year's. It's, here's this country artist in Nashville or Kansas City, and we're going to have them play while the clock strikes midnight. Happy New Year. It's like, okay, you're not going to do a countdown or anything ceremonious. Okay, I'm just going to go to bed. So did do a nice little cocktail yesterday, a little Captain Coke, and then teeth in the glass, go to bed.
I like it.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah, we just we took it easy. Staying home.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I have a couple news stories. We'll talk about that. And I want to see how people are reacting and feeling about going out in public. But something that I want to implement this. I'm starting this today. And I'm just letting my wife know this now. She's in studio. I'm just letting her know this now. I want to get like a big pickle jar, clean it out. And starting today, I'm going to take that empty jar and every day add a note with a good thing that happened. And then New Year's Eve next year, I'm going to go through those, look at them, and remind myself of what a good year it is. Because sometimes we get so lost. Already, you know, every year it ends with the same on social media. Oh, good riddance to 2021, 2022, yeah. 2023. Next year's my year. I had to laugh. One of my followers, friends online, Meg, she posted at like 12:05 a.m. and she goes, oh, I'm so done with this. 2026 will be my year. Mm-hmm. So she's already given up on 2025. It's done. But I figure, you know what? It's going to be a good way to kind of keep track of the good things. Let's remember the good things that happened this year and start. I need to start filling my head with the positivity.
Well, I mean, you're already off to a good start. You're working with me.
That is true.
So.
That is true. And then I leave tomorrow. I head out on the road to start filming a new TV show.
There you go.
And
you're a busy guy.
Yeah, so it's going to be fun. I'm excited to get back out and start doing that and get to continue to fill in here, plus my show every Sunday night from 7 to 9 p.m. So good times, good times. We do have some, obviously, some sad news to start off the show with today. And I want to pause to honor an extraordinary life. Harry Chandler is a Navy medic and a Pearl Harbor survivor. And he just passed away at the age of 103 years old. And think about that. 103 years. What mm-hmm. a life, right? Harry was just 21 when he found himself in the middle of one of the most pivotal moments in American history. December 7th, 1941, he's raising the flag at a hospital when the attack on Pearl Harbor began. Without hesitation, he jumped into action, pulling injured sailors from the oil-slick waters. And if you can imagine the chaos of that day and the courage it must have taken to step up like that, yeah, instead of running for the hills, just trying to get as far away from that carnage and damage. But Harry's story didn't stop there. He went on to serve in the Navy Reserves for decades, and he retired as a senior chief in 1981. And then beyond his military career, he lived a really nice, full, colorful life. He ran a business. He was big into golfing. He had 5 holes in one. Wow. How many do you have?
As many as most people. 0.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't want to brag.
I've never golfed.
I've got about 15.
Yeah.
Mini golf.
Yes.
But I've got 15 hole in ones.
Yeah. Mine are usually on the PS5.
Yeah. So. that's something.
It's not accomplishment.
It's not nothing.
Yeah.
He also raised a family that now spans 5 generations. And just last year, at the age of 102, he returned to Pearl Harbor for the anniversary commemoration and reflected on the attack with the wisdom of someone who'd lived through it, saying, "We should have known. Intelligence should have been better." And it's a reminder of how important it is to learn from history, especially from those that experienced it firsthand. And with Harry's passing, we lose another piece of living history. So these stories, his story, these are the treasures we have to keep alive. So again, today, take a moment to think about the courage and resilience of folks like Harry Chandler. Mr. Chandler, thank you for your service. Thank you for being so brave in the face of massive adversity and what could have been nothing less than one of the most terrifying moments in your life, and running into the fray as opposed to running away from it. That is remarkable. And to all of our military staff out there that are listening, thank you for your brave service and work that you've done for our country. It really does mean a lot. Have you ever been to Pearl Harbor?
I've not. I want to go out there. It's quite a trek to get out there.
Yeah.
Just to Hawaii in general.
Yeah. I went out there back in 98, I believe, 97 maybe it was, and visited. And I had one of the most profound emotional moments, totally unexpected. I went to the Pearl Harbor exhibit, and then there's this bridge that you can walk over where you stand over the USS Arizona.
Yeah.
And you go through the museum, you see the film, you see the footage that was captured from another ship where a man was out there filming and caught a lot of the attack.
Yeah.
And it's devastating to watch. But you walk out on this and you're standing there, and during the entire time, there's somebody out there raising the flag. They let the flag fly for a minute or two, then they pull it down, fold it up, hang up another one so that you can buy a flag that flew over the Arizona.
Yeah.
Which I ended up purchasing. It was just really powerful. But as I was standing there, and there weren't a lot of people, maybe about a dozen of us on this bridge, and we're all kind of separated. It was weird. You know, we were all yards away from each other. And I'm just standing there looking at the wreckage, and this bloop, and oil is still coming up from the Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And this bubble of oil came up, and I just started crying, Josh. I just started sobbing.
Yeah.
And part of me, then I'm embarrassed, you know, because I'm like, dude, what tie do you have to this? Yeah, it's so – but I kind of glance around. Every guy around me is bawling their eyes out.
Yeah.
And it was just the most powerful and impactful moment. And I realized, you know, nobody's above that. And that, I don't know if we were picking up still on that sense of pain and loss, if it was just so powerful to realize that we're standing above this grave. And do you know a lot of survivors from Pearl Harbor get interred inside that ship?
Mm.
So what they do is they'll be cremated. Then the jars are brought there.
Yep.
And they take it over the smokestack and drop them in.
Okay.
So that these sailors can return with their crew, because that's what their final wishes were. They wanted to return to finish serving with their crew. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing with that is when you serve, you talked earlier about, you know, having the fortitude, the gumption to go forward instead of going backward like everybody else was.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of just the gist of serving in the military is they have the courage that a lot of us don't, and the reason why they want to return to that phase, that state, is that's the life they knew. Like, right. That's when you serve, that's it's a big piece of you.
Yeah. So. We have to take a break. When we come back, 10 are dead in a terrorist attack that took place in New Orleans, and a Virginia man has been arrested as agents find the largest cache of finished explosive devices in FBI history. We'll talk about that and more right here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Chad Hartman has the day off. Dave Schrader sitting in. Oh, man, it's hard to start the year off with bad news, right? And we have to start today with some heartbreaking news out of New Orleans. Early New Year's Day, a driver in a white pickup truck intentionally plowed into a crowd on Bourbon Street in the French Quarter. Tragically, 10 people have lost their lives. More than 30 were injured. Again, a horrifying act of violence in one of the most vibrant, festive parts of our country on a day and a night that should be celebrated and looked upon for the new beginnings, not ends. So this is what we know so far. After the crash, the driver, who was armed and wearing body armor, got into a shootout with the police. He was killed in the exchange, and thankfully the officers involved are stable despite sustaining injuries. The FBI is now investigating this as an act of terrorism, and they've even found what appears to be explosive devices at the scene, although details are still emerging on that. And maybe, Josh, if we see any new news or intel on that, we can keep up to date. Mayor LaToya Cantrell has called this a terrorist attack, emphasizing that the act was, in fact, deliberate. President Biden has been briefed and has pledged federal support to New Orleans, which will likely need all the help it can get in the aftermath of something so devastating. Now, what's really troubling about this to me, aside from the obvious, is that Bourbon Street, they do have barriers that are meant to block vehicles from entering so that these type of problems don't happen, Josh. There are these, they're called bollards, they're retractable, and they've been in place since 2017 to protect the public. But for some reason, they weren't deployed at the time because there's ongoing road work in the area.
Yeah, I did see there's construction going on.
But then, I don't know, I still feel like put some cones up, put something up that causes a mental block. And I understand a nut is going to drive through cones, a nut's going to still do stupid things, but at least something. Maybe in those areas you have cops stationed there on the corner with machine guns. Something. Yeah,
there are alternatives.
Yeah, there's got to be a way. I can't. 2025, how the heck does this happen? It raises, again, very tough questions about safety planning and infrastructure, especially for places that draw big crowds like this, like Bourbon Street. So connect with me, if you'd like, through the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line 651-461-9226. Do experiences like this keep you from public spaces on special days and holidays? I mean, I'd love to hear your thoughts because, I mean, this is an issue that affects us all, whether we're locals or just visiting these popular hotspots. Would you, knowing that things like this are happening more and more often,
yeah,
and it seems every holiday somebody is dealing with a car driving into the crowd, would it keep it from going to these public spots and doing these things?
No, not necessarily. I think in today's day and age, we just know the risks we're putting. Like, anywhere, anytime, anything can happen. That's kind of the world we live in, especially big gatherings. I was talking to you during the break, and I'm just like, I had a bad feeling. I always have a bad feeling around this time anyways when these big gatherings happen, whether it's New Year's in New York, New Orleans, Minneapolis, wherever it may be, that something bad is going to happen. And just because we've become so accustomed with that, this kind of stuff happening. But no, it's not going to deter me. I'm sure it will deter a lot of people, and I get it. But it's just kind of the world we live in where we have to expect the unexpected in today's day and age.
I get the concept we can't live in a place of fear, walking around fearful to have these joyous moments because of something that could happen.
Yeah.
But on the other side of it, I'm a dad, I'm a pop-pop. I'm concerned going into these public venues for this. I'm concerned when my children want to go.
Yeah.
Because it does feel like it's ripe pickings for crazies. And I don't want to live in a state of fear, but I also don't want to necessarily make myself readily available to these kind of situations. I will admit it. I do avoid a lot of these type of moments because I just don't want to be there. You won't catch me in the Mall of America between November and January simply because it just seems like that's a place waiting for something to happen. And I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't like living in fear either. One of the listeners popping in on the talk and text line says, these incidents are still pretty rare. I won't let rare occurrences dictate my activities. And I understand that. And I applaud you on that. Congratulations. I don't like living in a state of fear. I really don't. And I don't want my life to be controlled or ruled by fear. You know, but the world is just such a weird place. You know, I mean, even having my daughters visit the Mall of America, you know, they're 18, 19, 20 year olds. Now the new concern is the trafficking situations. You know, people are waiting inside restrooms to dope up people and they give them quick injections. Oh, my friend got really sick. They carry them out to their car. It's scary to think this is taking place. You know, even my wife's very petite, 5 foot nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like living in fear for me, for them. I mean, that's part of the deal when you become a parent or the husband to a very petite wife that looks like she's 14. You know, then you have to you just worry about these situations taking place. And again, I hate that fear runs part of my life that way, but it does. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Again, I'd love to hear from you. 651-461-9226. And thank you to one of the listeners who has corrected my grammar. I said in the headline, Virginia man arrested as agents find largest cache. It's cash in this situation of finished explosive devices. So again, this is a shocking story out of Virginia. The FBI has arrested a guy named Brad Spafford after they found what they're calling one of the largest stashes of homemade explosive devices in their history. That's a long time, Josh.
It is.
They found over 150 explosive, completed explosive devices. Can you even imagine? You go in to, because you, whatever reason, you're brought to check this out. You expect maybe you're going to find a pipe bomb. You're going to find something crazy. To find 150 bombs. And it started again when a neighbor tipped off authorities saying that Spafford was up to some kind of suspicious stuff. So again, congratulations, applaud you, see something, say something. I'd rather think it's suspicious and have the police call just to examine it than not. And then we're all sitting there scratching our heads wondering, how did nobody know this guy was like this? Apparently, this guy's even lost a few fingers handling the explosives. So when agents raided his property, they uncovered all kinds of terrifying things. They had pipe bombs, bomb-making materials, and even a vest loaded with explosives. And get this, some of the devices were labeled lethal. Well, at least he was kind enough to let us know which ones we really need to worry about.
Yeah.
But it's still not very comforting. But to make it even more concerning, this guy reportedly had some pretty extreme anti-government views. And there were photos of President Biden had been using for target practice. And he talked about fortifying his property with heavy weapons. So it's hard to not wonder what his eventual plans were going to be here. And right now he's being charged with possessing an unregistered short barrel rifle and was initially released on bond with electronic monitoring. But with the explosive discovery, it sounds like more charges are on the way. I hope so, right?
That's a lot.
So here's a big question again. How do we handle situations like this? How do we balance individuals' rights with keeping the community safe? And another listener popping up here on the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. I think once you become a parent, you just inherently become a bit more risk averse. I know I have, being the father of a 12-year-old daughter. Happy New Year, guys. And that's from Saul and Blaine. Thank you for listening, Saul, and chiming in. Are people really being drugged at the Mall of America in the bathroom? You'd think that would make news. Call me suspicious. Stop spreading fear about Mall of America unless you can back up your claims about human trafficking in the bathrooms, etc. Is this really being reported? Yeah, not necessarily at the Mall of America. I just said I have fears about my daughters going to the Mall of America because of trafficking and issues that are taking place around the United States. Back it up. Do your own research. You got Google. You had the time to sit here and text me and tell me I'm an idiot. Go ahead and check it out for yourself. I'm not making this stuff up. I don't have these fears for absolutely no reason. It's because these things are happening. And police are putting out warnings in different cities and states to be aware of these situations. So I'm not spreading fear. What I'm doing is educating you to research for yourself, educate yourself so that you aren't part of the surprise. How did we not know about this? Well, how do we not know about it? Because somebody like me comes on and starts talking about it and is immediately attacked for fear-mongering and spreading false information. Sadly, it's not false information. There is an alarming amount of trafficking going on in our country. Very scary. We have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by a special guest, Danielle C. Davis. She is the director of the Body Donation Program at Ohio State University's College of Medicine, and she plays a very critical role in managing the morgue and cadaveric dissection program. We're going to talk about donating your body to science. What does that mean? How does one do that? We'll talk about it next right here on News Talk 830 WCCO. It's 12:36, your time check, the Lindus Construction time check. Time to get $500 off your insulation project. Call for more details. I'm honored to welcome now Danielle C. Davis to the show. Danielle is the director of the Body Donation Program at Ohio State University's College of Medicine, where she plays a critical role in managing the morgue and the cadaveric dissection program, from overseeing donor registration and intake to preparing and distributing cadavers for dissection courses. Danielle ensures that each contribution advances medical education and research. Also a licensed funeral director and embalmer with 15 years of experience, she brings both expertise and compassion to her work, honoring the legacies of those who chose to make this extraordinary gift. Joining me now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Danielle Davis. Danielle, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much. It's such an honor to be able to speak with you.
Well, this is something I find fascinating because, again, a lot of people, when they're planning the end of life, many of us just think, oh, is it cremation or is it, are we burial? What else
exactly
could be done? And the fact that people can donate and probably should donate their bodies to science, I think people think about that in a very fringe way, but it's so much more important. And can you talk to us a little bit about that? How prevalent is it? Are there enough people doing it, or are we really still struggling?
Yeah, so we are always looking for donors, and that sounds kind of morbid and macabre, but as you mentioned, our donations are so critical to our teaching of medical students, dental students, anatomy students. And so, while it's becoming more prevalent in the United States, we have about 120 anatomical programs in the U.S. We're always still looking for donors to contribute.
When people do contribute, what all is involved in doing something like that? And how many fiery hoops do we have to jump through? Does our family have to jump through? Because obviously I want to make my end of life as easy as possible for my family to deal with.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Of course, my puppy decides now is a good time to
sure,
tell sing the song of her people.
tell her I'll be happy to interview her in the next segment.
Right, okay. Exactly. So what's great about a lot of these programs is that we do cover all the expenses. So once an individual is donated and brought into our program, there's no cost to the family. So we do always ask that people pre-register for the program. That's usually just filling out some paperwork, making sure that their wishes are known. But generally speaking, it's pretty easy.
Now, is this something, if I have like on my ID that I'm a donor, take whatever you can use from this portly form that I have, use it. Do you still want the body, what's left over, if I've donated my heart, lung, eyes, whatever? Is that something that is still important for these programs?
So every program is a little bit different. With ours, unfortunately, it is mutually exclusive. So if you donate heart, lungs, so on and so forth, you wouldn't be qualified for donation. Now, that's not the case for all programs, but it is for ours. However, you know, we certainly do encourage folks to pursue organ donation. We think that's so, so important. And I certainly don't want to discourage someone from, you know, going that route.
Right. And I think that's an important element because obviously we need those donations as well. But there
exactly.
there are a lot of people right now, Danielle, and I don't mean this to sound macabre, but there are a lot of people sure. who at the end of life are in a really awkward position because, you know, as I found out 8 years ago when my mom passed away, my yeah. grandparents had purchased four plots, side-by-side plots. And okay. when my mom had passed, was about to pass away, we went to the funeral home. He said, do you already have a funeral plot? We're like, yes, it's already paid for. This is done. He showed us the coffins, the cost on the coffins. And sure. We're like, okay, great. And then he handed us the bill. And my dad and I just yeah. sat there and our jaw hit the ground. And I went, holy cow, 30 grand? I said, we already yeah. own the plot. He goes, oh, right. But it still cost $12,000 to break ground, plus then the concrete you know, internments casing, then the burial, mm-hmm. then this, then that. And talk yeah. about junk fees that are added on you don't expect. And my dad and I just mm-hmm. sat there. My dad's like, whatever it takes. And I said, well, let's talk to mom. And I went back and talked to mom. She'd rather be cremated and all said and done was out $3,500 as opposed to $35 mm-hmm. just for the burial. And
exactly.
we made those decisions as a family. But, you know, had I not had a chance to speak to my mom before that, I don't know what would have occurred. I guess we would have just gone through with the old-fashioned burial. But in this case, mm-hmm. you know, like when I go, I don't care. Donate my body to science. Donate it to right. the aquarium, whatever, wherever I'm going to be the most useful. Put me
sure.
there. I don't yeah. want my kids and family to have to spend inordinate amounts of money after they're already facing this loss, dealing with the stress and pressure of losing a loved one. And, you know, if my body and my health or lack thereof can help advance science in any way, shape, or form, that'd be great. Now, I know there's some concern because we sure. hear weird stories every year about bodies that have been yeah. donated or in yeah. some instances in even at funeral homes that have been discarded or treated poorly. And I think that's part of what makes people fearful of these situations. So I would guess dealing with the colleges directly in these type of programs, that is a much more secure avenue.
Most definitely. You know, unfortunately, you know, Harvard just came out in the news recently, and you're thinking an institution like that would surely have all their ducks in a row, so to speak. But, you know, it's something that we there's no legislation nationwide, so a lot of it is left up to each individual program. However, there is a big push to have those, you know, systems in place to make sure that we are honoring the individual. I mean, it's such an incredible gift and something that we certainly don't take for granted. So I think it's really important that, you know, people not only know this is an opportunity, a very cost-effective opportunity, as you note, but also one that's going to be treated with, you know, the respect that it deserves. And, you know, part of that education is what I'm really passionate about, making sure that people know that, you know, there are just so many different alternatives, as you noted, to the $30,000 burial, which as a recovering funeral director, I totally get it. So
out of curiosity, let's say yeah. I don't have anything written out properly about my end of life wishes and mm-hmm. I pass away. Can my body be donated? Can my wife make that decision? Do I have to have had a directive already written up? What information can you give us about that?
Yeah. So in our program, we do the prearranged donation, meaning that the donor themselves, you know, reaches out and says, these are my wishes. We also do what's referred to as a next of kin donation, meaning that the family recognizes that, hey, my loved one, this is something they would like to do, or, you know, realistically, from a financial sense, it makes, you know, better idea to go that route so that we do have that opportunity. Again, it's going to vary from program to program. For example, a couple in the state of Ohio, you have to be pre-registered. But like I said, we try and accommodate, you know, all of those wishes, not only because of the need for our students, but also to honor those wishes. Things happen. Things, you know, come up and are unexpected, or maybe dad passed quicker than, you know, they anticipated. So we certainly want to do everything we can to honor those wishes.
Well, if it helps, Danielle, my wife just texted me and said that you could just take me now. She said, "It's I'm really become expensive anyway, so I don't know if you guys house me until that time or how that works." But let's take a quick break. When we come back, I just would like to explain a little bit, maybe to give people a little bit more of a sense of comfort and understanding. Once a body is donated, what exactly happens? And then afterwards, what is done with the remains? We'll talk about that when we return. Danielle Davis, our guest right here on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. When we return to News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to the program. Chad Hartman's off. Dave Schrader filling in. Danielle Davis, our guest, the director of the Body Donation Program at Ohio State University College of Medicine. We're talking about an opportunity for people. Again, the funerary expenses are off the charts when it comes to that. But I think a lot of people then are curious. So if Dave Schrader passes away today, I've made an agreement with you to take my body. Is there still a wake? Is there still a funeral-like process and then you take the body after that? And once the body is taken, what happens from that point?
Sure. So, well, as I always say to my potential donors, we don't want to see you anytime soon. So I just want to make sure the universe knows that we don't want to see Dave Schrader anytime soon.
Thank
but
you.
With that said, we, with our program, and again, I can only speak to ours, but we unfortunately don't have an opportunity to do like a traditional showing or viewing ahead of time. That's not to say that funeral homes can't set up just a very simple goodbye, so to speak, where no embalming takes place, but the family still gets, you know, a chance to see their loved one. And again, you know, other programs may be a little bit different. But then once the individual is in our care, we perform, in most cases, just a very traditional embalming, just like they would at a funeral home, followed up by a little bit additional preparation, just because our donors can be in the program for up to 2 years. So we really try and, you know, make the most out of every donation that we get.
What do you mean they're in your program for up to 2 years?
Yeah, I know. It sounds a little strange, right? So most of our programs concern, you know, anatomical studies. So our future doctors, dentists, they work with that same donor for 1 to 2 years. So they're really getting to know their first patient, so to speak, studying the anatomy, studying maybe not the pathology of why the person passed away, but just, you know, still getting a sense of the basic human body. And then once that's been completed, then we do perform the cremation at no charge. And we also do have a memorial service every year for our donors.
Now, if the cremation takes place, are those cremains returned back to the family, or is that something that's done a different way?
Yeah, so we have two options. We can either return the cremated remains to the family or send them directly to a cemetery, whichever the family would prefer. Or we also do have a mausoleum space where we can keep those cremated remains for the family.
So this is truly a great way to take care of your funerary expenses, help advance science and medicine, and still end up with the remains of your loved ones. But knowing that that person, that loved one, has gone on in even the afterlife helping others and being an answer or at least a new advancement towards understanding medical issues.
Most definitely. And, you know, as a funeral director and just as someone who has lost someone themselves, you know, 2 years is a long time to wait to get those cremated remains back. It's that sense of closure that we try and you know, search after, so to speak.
Sure.
And so we're very sensitive to that. But that's part of the reason that memorial service every year is so moving. We've got all these donor families that come together, have that sense of community, you know, and are able to share their very unique grief.
That's beautiful. What a great way to do it, and what a great way to help. Now, when these bodies are being worked on, are they simply for students to learn anatomy, learn to do these things? Are we looking at different ways to preserve internal organs? What all is the science that goes into the work that's done after the fact?
Yeah, so I would say a majority of our students learn from the donors via the study of anatomy, so the basic structures. Whether it's the bones or the muscles, tissues, nerves, anything related to that. We do also have some programs where maybe there are surgeons that are looking to try a new surgical technique. So that would be a slightly different preparation method for those donors, but still, you know, helping surgeons who maybe have been doing this for a long time but want to try out a new technique, to give them that opportunity.
One of the listeners hits us up on the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. And folks, if you're listening and have a question, you can call in or text at 651-461-9226. Listener says, did I miss it? Is there an age limit?
Oh, that's a great question. There is no upper age limit. So with organ donation, for example, there are some age limits. You have to meet certain criteria, like where you pass away. But with body donation, really, as long as you don't have any communicable diseases, such as hepatitis, HIV, anything that could be transferred from person to person, doesn't matter why you pass away, we're able to move forward. So there's a little bit more flexibility with whole body donation.
Fantastic. Now, if people are listening, and obviously there are programs like this, are they in every state?
Just about. In Minnesota, there is the Mayo Clinic has a program, as well as the University of Minnesota. Ohio in itself, gosh, I think has 7 or 8 different programs. Although from state to state, sometimes it's governed by a statewide board as opposed to like an individual university. But if you just search, you know, body donation in Google in your location, that should pop right up. And of course, I'm always, you know, happy to answer questions. Whether you're in Ohio, Minnesota, Wisconsin, wherever you might be.
All right. That's, again, great information, a great opportunity for people to reexamine another way and an affordable way. Because, again, like
most
you said,
definitely, you
guys end up taking care of all of those expenses and even the mm-hmm. cremation so that within 2 years you'll get those remains back. And for me, like, you know, obviously, I love my wife. She just said to me during the break, if, you know, I would do this. I would totally do this. So we will be contacting the Mayo Clinic here in Minnesota to make arrangements for both of us. And, you know, whether I get her remains back a day later or 2 years later, to me, it doesn't matter. They're coming back to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's all that I really care about in the long run. And just knowing that there is a way to help people avoid those overwhelming and sometimes backbreaking expenses and do
exactly.
something that's going to really help further the education for science and medicine is fantastic. Danielle, I applaud the work that you're doing and keeping this out there. So thank you very much for joining us and sharing some insight. Any other last minute things you want to mention to me that maybe I haven't asked?
No, I just think I'm so glad for this opportunity. Like I said, a lot of what I do is education and making sure that people even know this is an option, especially, as you mentioned, the financial constraints that so many people are facing today. You know, healthcare costs are rising. Maybe we don't have insurance. You know, there's a lot of different variables. So I just encourage, you know, regardless of the route that you go, burial, cremation, donation, just, you know, be an educated consumer, make those phone calls and ask the questions.
I think my wife's just relieved that she doesn't have to try to figure out how to stuff me in a garbage bag and drag me out to the end of the curb on Wednesdays now. Makes it a lot easier.
Probably.
Danielle, thank you so much for joining us and spending some time here. Is there a website people can go to, a national website, a registry, anything?
There isn't anything national at this time, but like I said, if you just Google your location and body donation, you know, programs should pop right up.
Fantastic. Danielle C. Davis, the director of body donation program at Ohio State University College. Educate yourself, folks. Go out there, get some information. Look at this because I don't know about you. This relieves a lot of pressure off of my shoulders because thinking, boy, I don't want to put this on my family. And yes, I have life insurance, but I would much rather that life insurance money goes to my family to help them keep the ship floating while they can. That to me is an important part, and knowing that I'm going to give that relief. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about a very deep subject regarding the death.
Hi, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. We've helped over 20,000 wedding parties get suited up. And here's the deal. You don't need to rent a suit. For about the same price, you can own one that's perfectly tailored for you. Over 60% of our business comes from referrals because we make it so easy. Whether your groomsmen live nearby or out of state, we've got everything covered. Trust me, this is the easiest part of planning your wedding. Stop by Nick's Menswear and let us show you why we're the fastest growing suit company in the country. Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Penalty. We'll do that when we return right here to News Talk 830 WCCO.